All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information or to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. From the North American Review, January 18, 1907, Chapters from My Autobiography, Chapter 10, by Mark Twain. Dictated March 28, 1906. Orion Clemens was born in Jamestown, Fentress County, Tennessee, in 1825. He was the family's firstborn, and he dated me 10 years. Between him and me came a sister, Margaret, who died aged 10. And Pamela, mother of Samuel E. Moffat, who was an invalid all her life, and died in the neighborhood of New York a year ago, aged about 75. Her character was without blemish, and she was of a most kindly and gentle disposition. Also, there was a brother, Benjamin, who died in 1843, aged 10 or 12. Orion's boyhood was spent in that wee little log hamlet of Jamestown, up there among the knobs, so-called, of East Tennessee. The family migrated to Florida, Missouri, then moved to Hannibal, Missouri, when Orion was 12 and a half years old. When he was 15 or 16, he was sent to St. Louis, and there he learned the printer's trade. One of his characteristics was eagerness. He woke with an eagerness about some matter every morning. It consumed him all day. It perished in the night, and he was on fire with a fresh new interest next morning before he could get his clothes on. He exploited in this way 365 red-hot new eagernesses every year of his life. But I am forgetting another characteristic, a very pronounced one. That was his deep glooms, his despondencies, his despairs. These had their place in each and every day along with the eagerness. Thus his day was divided, no, not divided, mottled from sunrise to midnight with alternating brilliant sunshine and dark cloud. Every day he was the most joyous and hopeful man that ever was, I think, and also every day he was the most miserable man that ever was. While he was in his apprenticeship in St. Louis, he got well acquainted with Edward Bates, who was afterwards in Mr. Lincoln's first cabinet. Bates was a very fine man, an honorable and upright man, and a distinguished lawyer. He patiently allowed Orion to bring to him each new project. He discussed it with him and extinguished it by argument and irresistible logic at first. But after a few weeks he found that this labor was not necessary, that he could leave the new project alone, and it would extinguish itself the same night. Orion thought he taught in their Sunday schools, changing his Sunday school every time he changed his religion. He was correspondingly erratic in his politics, Whig today, Democrat next week, and anything fresh that he could find in the political market the week after. I may remark here that throughout his long life, he was always trading religions and enjoying the change of scenery. I will also remark that his sincerity was never doubted. His truthfulness was never doubted. And in matters of business and money, his honesty was never questioned. Notwithstanding his forever recurring caprices and changes, his clothes on to speak of, but no matter, he was well enough fixed for an occasion like this because he had a butcher knife in his hand. Ryan shouted to him, and this saved his life, for the doctor recognized his voice. Then in those deep sea-going bass tones of his that I used to admire so much when I was a little boy, out. Larry is an admirable creature. He had no principles and was delightful company. At first, we three apprentices had to feed in the kitchen with the old slave cook and her very handsome and bright and well-behaved young mulatto daughter. For his own amusement, for he was not generally laboring for other people's amusement, Steve was constantly and persistently and loudly and elaborately making love to that mulatto girl and distressing the life out of her and worrying the old mother to death. She would say, "Now, Marsteve, can't you behave yourself?" With encouragement like that, Steve would naturally renew his attentions and emphasize them. It was killingly funny to Ralph and me. And, to speak truly, the old mother's distress about it was merely a pretense. She quite well understood that by the customs of slaveholding communities, it was Steve's right to make love to that girl if he wanted to. But the girl's distress was very real. She had a refined nature, and she took all Steve's extravagant lovemaking in resentful earnest. We got but little variety in the way of food at that kitchen table, and there wasn't enough of it anyway. So we apprentices used to keep alive by arts of our own. That is to say, we crept into the cellar nearly every night by a private entrance which we had discovered, and we robbed the cellar of potatoes and onions and such things, and carried them downtown to the printing office, where we slept on pallets on the floor, and cooked them at the store, and had very good times. As I have indicated, Mr. S.'s economies were of a pretty close and rigid kind. By and by, when the apprentices were promoted from the basement to the ground floor and allowed to sit at the family table, along with the one journeyman, Harry H., the economies continued. Mrs. S. was a bride. She had attained to that distinction very recently, after waiting a good part of a lifetime for it, and she was the right woman in the right place, according to the economies of the place, for she did not trust the sugar bowl to us, but sweetened our coffee herself, that is,